The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is from information security to information assurance. The game has changed. Should players too? Our guests for today's show are David Stanowick, who is the Vice President and Chief Information Officer for Alliance Data. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm great. It's a beautiful day here in Dallas, and feeling great.
Very good. Now we have Dan Shoemaker, who's the director of the Institute of Cybersecurity Studies, a national security agency, which is NSA's Center of Academic Excellence at the University of Detroit Mercy. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Oh, just fine. It's one of the rare sunny days up here in Detroit.
Rare sunny day. So you're not having the greatest weather there?
Never. Never, ever.
Now, Rafael C. Diaz, who is the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Illinois. Hi, Rafael. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Great. So the topic that we picked up today, we are looking at security, and we had been talking about security from all possible different angles. But the fact that we are morphing the very vertical or the very discipline itself, which is information security, and now earlier it was like computer security, and then it was information security, and now we're talking about information assurance. So the whole idea behind this is, if while the very discipline has been changing, what has been changing with respect to the responsibilities, accountability, and expectations from a CISO? So David, let's start with you.
Sure. So I've seen it as a constant continuum. As new platforms are introduced, there's new risks, there's new focus. And also keeping in mind that kind of the whole concept of hacking has changed from one of fame and such into more of a focus on profit. So as I've been in the business, I've seen the role transform several times. As you mentioned, it began as a data security, a manager responsible for IDs and passwords, and then grew into a bigger role, kind of blending business continuity, disaster recovery, and focus on that, the CIA triad of integrity and availability and confidentiality. And then that role was more of expected to be more of a consultant and an evangelist to the company to bring about change and understanding of the awareness of the security. And now I see it, as a person who is expected to have a holistic view of the technology risk profile within the company, and someone who is able to work with the business leaders and the technology leaders and prioritize activities and budget focused on mitigating the risk, with more of a focus on strategic versus tools and technologies.
So now the way the world is going, Rafael, let us go with you. How have you seen you being asked, what have you been asked to do over the years? Have you been just asked to hold the fort and secure the fort, or they are also asking you to start looking at things a little deeper, which are more in the territory of a CIO?
Yeah, I think that it's grown much further into that area of the CIO and even further into the actual business strategy and what are the business drivers for the organization. And there are a myriad of skills that the CISO needs to bring to the table. Need to understand, of course, the technical security issues that David spoke about at all layers of the OSI stack. Understand compliance, regulation, and law. Understand and be able to define policy and enforcement mechanisms. How to organize people, the processes, and technology. How to manage audits and compliance issues. So there's all these myriad of tasks that the CISO needs to bring to the table today.
Now, if this is what is going on at this hour, where we are already having threats from all over the world, are you being expected to lead that, or you're expecting CIO to tell you what to do next in terms of what to secure? Because, of course, your priorities would be changing. So, Rafael, do you think this is why the way you spent your time in just making sure that you're securing the fort versus taking control of what somebody is doing, and in sometimes even prevent CIO from making a change to the organization so that they don't kind of introduce vulnerability? Is that... Are you given that empowerment?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's not a question of waiting for the CIO to tell you what to do. It's really taking the lead, and working with the different leaders within the organization to determine what needs to be done, and being that thought leader in the organization for information assurance.
So, Dan, in your world, how has the world be? How are things changing? What are you being looked at as?
Well, I mean, I really hate it when the two guys in front of you more or less answer the question in ways that basically are everything you were just about to say. And so I'm kind of in a position of saying what those guys just said. But basically, the thing that I see out there is that the CISO is kind of in the eye of the beholder. So depending on the organization you're in, you've got different responsibilities. And I think to some extent that's sort of a problem, only because you've got people that are sort of seen as highly technical, and that's basically what they're supposed to do on one hand. On the other hand, you've got, broad strategists and that sort of thing. And the idea basically that the CISO is a position in kind of an industry is a role that's more or less defined by the company. It's not necessarily a good thing.
Now, Dan, in your world, when you actually are approaching the CIO to say, I would like to bring to your notice these five vulnerabilities that might exist or might crop up in coming days. So the natural reaction is, there you go, another budget head or budget increase, which I do not know how will I justify to the executive management. Or are they looking at it, let's put our heads together and try to see, is it selling fear or is it something beyond that, and can we quantify that risk? How are they looking at you?
Was that aimed at me?
Was that?
Were you asking me?
Yes, sir.
The CISO role is a strategic role, plain and simple. Wherever it's been at, it's evolved into that situation only because threats out there are as meaningful as they are. The whole cybersecurity thing is big business on the kind of criminal side. And so, the idea basically is that you have, if your CISO is messing around with technology and vulnerabilities, they better be doing it in a way that more or less builds business value for the company. That to me is sort of what the CISO ought to be doing in terms of where they morph to. But most CISOs got a technical background. And I think in general, when you're talking about that in a company full of lawyers and finance majors, you've got sort of a different breed of animal. In my own mind, the CISO is basically an executive first, and then a technologist second.
Now, David, in your world, since you had been dealing with this for quite some time, how have you seen the private sector and or the government sector looking at information assurance? Are they still saying this is a sugar-coated version of information security, or there is something more to it?
Oh, I think the realization that cybercrime is apparent, and the focus on where the threats are coming from and the impact to business is very apparent, and has moved that needle from kind of the simple technology kind of focus to a broader perspective on what is the risk that these threats bring to the overall state of economy. So I think that there is a new focus and a new understanding on the threats, and that has moved up the chain to a higher level of focus.
So do you think the threat has to exist for CISO's role and information security / information assurance's priority to go high, or does it require an event or an imminent threat for it to really come on the forefront?
Well, I think, I mean, it's kind of morphs into something else where, you know, I think years ago, you know, it might have been typical for CIOs to try to distance themselves from security issues and you know, claim that the security was more of a hindrance to their performance. But now I think that it's mostly recognized that, you know, security is essential to not just the CIO's success, but the business success, and that there is recognition that the sooner we can bring security into the project life cycle, kind of the more cost-effective the solution would be.
Now, Rafael, in your world and otherwise wherever you've seen security being handled, how are they differentiating between risk and threat? Because we do see a risk management department, and then we see a security department. Do you think they are synonymous, or there is an actual quantifiable and qualitative difference between the two?
Well, they're not synonymous, but they are symbiotic, and so it's an interesting paradigm how it's shifting. Right, a threat is actually a coercive act that has a negative consequence. Right, and it can be external or internal, and a risk exists when a vulnerability is open to exploit from a threat. So if the threat exists and there is a vulnerability, then you get the exploit, and that's where we start to have problems. But just because there's a threat doesn't necessarily mean that there's a risk, and if a vulnerability exists doesn't mean that there's actually going to be an exploit. So it's a matter of understanding all three of those components, weighing them, and determining what is the threat landscape for that organization, for the business processes that are underway, for the people that are involved in the organization, and then how do we manage that? Right, it's not about eliminating the threat. Right, CISOs are not law enforcement officials or military generals. Right, their prime objective is to eliminate the threat. Our objective is to secure the environment, understand what the business drivers are, and ensure that those business drivers are enabled.
When there was a threat, and perhaps not enough damage, or there was no damage yet, but there is a threat, does that come back and point fingers at you that you did not do your job?
You know, traditionally, the answer would probably be yes, but I think today it's not necessarily so. And, you know, and also, of course, it depends on the organizational structure of the organization. Where does that CISO report, and where is the responsibility and accountability for involved in the managing those threats? So, you know, it's impossible to make anything 100% secure. You don't put a $10 lock on a $1 piece of equipment. You have to understand what the risks are, and so as those risks are then shared among the organization, then the accountability is also shared. But it's a difficult question to answer in just a few seconds that we have. But it's certainly an issue that needs to be thought of organizationally and not from one office.
So let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And let's look at what is the true delegation that we can have for technology risk to the CIO, or is it something that the whole IT organization has to share, including the CIO? And for that matter, why not stretch it to all the way up to the CEO and or even the board? Because if the risk is getting created, everybody is going to get impacted regardless. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back, and we will start with Dan on this.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
Look
looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
The Sports Mavericks Show redefines the elite athlete by bridging the gap between parents, athletes, and the community. Host Ida Moyet, a.k.a. the Oprah of sports, brings to the Voice America Network original programming, balancing the pursuit of academic excellence and sports participation. The Sports Mavericks Show airs every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Listeners will be engaged in straightforward talk, spontaneous and unscripted by the experts. Ida and her guests will explore the challenges of success and failure in sports and will help athletes and their parents navigate the transition from high school, college, and then on to the pros. We put fun back into sports and recognize role models in sports through our Sports Mavericks All-Star Award program. Tune in Tuesday evenings at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with Ida Moyet and the Sports Mavericks Show right here on the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So we were talking about the delegation, and Dan, let's start with you. If we were to call risk as, of course, you know, we use the term technology risk, everybody gets impacted, whether it's workers, whether it's management, middle management, CEO, the board, CIO, everyone else. So why should you be the Hercules as the CISO and take on all the responsibility?
Well, first of all, there's almost no way in the world the CISO is placed in their organization in a way that they can actually affect change. And so in a lot of ways, CISO role, as far as I see it, is sort of designated scapegoat. Most of the problems that are out there right now are insider problems that have absolutely nothing to do with the technology. Basically, you got trusted individuals inside the security perimeter who are ripping you off, and that's basically a personnel problem. You solve it with proper procedure and practice and discipline or organization. But that's not something that the person that's seen as the information technology guy is going to have any influence over. The only people that can influence that are the people at the top. The Brits assign that responsibility to the board by standard. And I think that's probably where it belongs, because you're either secure or you're not, you know. And I mean, it's just a common sense thing. Somebody walks off of your company's designs, that's not, I mean, that's whoever was at fault or whoever the finger got pointed at, that's not going to be the issue. The issue is going to be the company's out of business. And so you should want to protect the stuff that at least priority stuff. And that really involves the whole, the company as a whole, making a commitment to do that. Not saying, well, you know, you that down there in the IT area with the CISO, you take care of that for us, would you? There is a standard, which you may or may not be aware of, at the Department of Homeland Security, for that more or less defines the job role for the CISO. That's the essential body of knowledge, your EBK, if you want to sort of Google it up. And that's got a little bit of traction now and is starting to kind of move ahead in terms of job definitions and that sort of stuff. And in the thing, basically what you got is management and design of, you know, kind of the process as a whole across the company involving, I don't know, 10 or no, 14 areas, including things like regulatory compliance and, you know, soft stuff like that, personnel security. That's all got to get integrated. If it's not integrated, basically what you've got is a defensive holes in it. And that can only really be done from the top down.
So, David, since you've done research and you've gone through multiple possible case studies of how CISO's role may be morphing in or how information assurance is where we are going, do you think that the scope, the way it's changing, as Daniel said, it's like a scapegoat? First of all, would you not think that there is way too much riding for us to simply tell that it was your problem and you did it, so you get fired or would be disciplined, and we solve the problem that way?
I think that might have been the way, and it's possible there's different models based upon academic or government, or the private sector, but. I guess I look at it sort of this way, is that, depending on how the organization's structured, I believe that the identification and ownership of the, what I call the technology risk program, is delegated to the CISO in a way, and whether that's delegated from the, from the board or the CEO, I think it's sort of a, sort of a self-understood role. And, the actual managing, and mitigating of the risks, that has to be done to an acceptable level needs to really be owned and performed by the people responsible for the technology that could be, causing that risk. In a sense, I would say that, there's no good answer, but there's a shared responsibility, and it depends upon how the CISO's function is chartered in the organization. The board that what I've observed is more interested in getting more frequent updates on the risks that that can affect the firm's bottom line. I think the board is more interested in having somebody that could come and speak in business terms on the risks that are affecting the company. And I believe that person, that role, is being more empowered to have venues to express concerns or to raise the level of awareness of risks through perhaps the enterprise risk management program or through other aspects as well.
Rafael, let me ask you this. I was yesterday at the airport, and they were saying, please be aware that the security levels have been raised to orange alert. When was the last time we listened to anything else? So does it become cliched, or does it become as trivial that you keep going back to the CIO and say, oh, we have to do secure the fort, there are some imminent threats? How are they reacting to something like this? Or do they want to hear?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sanju. Folks do essentially become deaf to those crying wolf stories, right? So if there is an issue, then the issue needs to be tied to those business drivers, right? And if you go in front of the board, as David was talking, he's absolutely right. You've got to be able to speak in their language. And what are their language? Their language is they're looking at key performance indicators. They want to know, how is the business doing? How is it performing? And are we meeting those indicators? And if you want to talk about risk, you need to talk about it in terms of how it impacts those key performance indicators. And once you do that, then you're going to get their attention. Then they're going to understand exactly what you're talking about. If you try to come and tell them, oh, there's a DNS redirect or there's a DDoS attack, and we need more money, they're going to look at you like you don't know what you're talking about. And so they need to understand it in terms of those key performance indicators so that they can then make the appropriate decisions. And then they can budget for it appropriately because they'll know exactly what they're budgeting for.
So, Rafael, if you are dealing on a day-to-day basis with issues, for the most part, there is a fear of the unknown, or you're preparing for the unknown because you do not have predictability of what kind of attack would happen. And then first you're saying, to the rest of the world or within the organization that something can happen which could introduce risk or create loss or, you know, cause loss to the organization. And then when it does happen, it's of a different flavor. So then you go about fighting fires for the most part because it was an unknown thing and we cannot blame anyone for that. Then how does the rest of the organization look at this role? That this person is not having his or her act together. Is that how they look at it?
Yeah, it depends on how you're performing the role. It depends on what you're doing exactly. So, for instance, Illinois just participated in Cyberstorm 3, which is the national level exercise with five different countries, 40 federal agencies, 11 states. And it's essentially a cyber attack against the systems within the nation and the state. And how do we respond? The question is, how do we respond to these types of attacks? And they're all technical attacks, but there's bad guys doing bad things to our networks and to our databases. And so how do we respond? And it's really about how do we communicate? How do we talk to one another? What kind of information are we sharing? And how are we able to get that information to the appropriate people so that they can act, they can respond? And so fixing the technical problem is not the biggest difficulty. The biggest difficulty is communicating those issues appropriately to the appropriate individuals, to law enforcement, to other agencies within the state, to national-level organizations like the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center, which is part of Homeland Security. So it's if you are, as a CISO, performing these exercises, preparing the individuals for, preparing the organization for these types of events, knowing that it's not a matter of if the attack will happen, but when the attack will happen, then folks will start to understand that, and you'll gain more credibility, and folks will understand that the organization is then more prepared for any type of imminent attack.
So if we were to go back and look at the information assurance, as we were saying, and if we were to define it, it was essentially the right data at the right time, available in the right way, and that is for making the right decision. All of this doesn't look like security and or anything related to what a chief information security officer could help with. David, what do you think?
Well, I think that's kind of a broad definition of information assurance. And, you know, it certainly is true that we need to have strong data integrity and data availability to make those sound business decisions. Yet we need to make sure that the data is used for its intended purposes and doesn't leak to, you know, competitors or enemies. And so kind of, you know, I think when I think of this, you know, I factor in many aspects that can pose risk to the data. You know, and the decisions that are made from that data, and you know, I think you know the CISO can bring to light, you know, some non-apparent risks that could sabotage, you know, a business plan, or you know, things such as a careless user handling data, you know, someone overlooking controls. I heard you know, a study that was done recently, I think it was Verizon, that indicated that there wasn't a single breach that they had investigated that couldn't have been avoided if the systems were properly patched. So, you know, I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, people aren't doing their job correctly. There's data that's sent that's not encrypted or improperly disposed, and I think those are all contributing factors.
So now let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll come back and let's look at the separation of security governance from security operations. Or should there be one? That is number one question. And if yes, how do you accomplish it? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Wielding power, shaping environments and outcomes, and making things happen are all essential characteristics of great leaders. Yet these qualities alone are not enough to ensure your success. In a complex world, how do you decide what's most important to you? In your career, your relationships, your finances, your family, in the world around you, in the whole of your life at large? Dr. Joseph Riggio, the host of Leadership Intuition, says that personal leadership, the desire to take charge of your life, is the key to creating futures that work and building a life worth living. Join Joseph as he reveals the power of uncovering and living your own personal mythology, the key to personal transformation, exquisite performance, and social influence. Learn to look inside and discover your personal mythology and unique leadership style. Go beyond conventional advice and discover your unique success blueprint on Leadership Intuitions with Dr. Joseph Riggio each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Leadership Intuitions, power, achievement, relationships.
Zoom Leadership.
It's the big picture issues of the day, up close and personal capabilities of leadership, and a desirable future of constant renewal.
Zoom Leadership.
It's the economic crisis made clear, patterns and perspectives of leadership, and the importance of changing the way we pursue our future. Join host John Schmidt every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time.
Zoom Leadership.
An inside look at what's really going on in business, government, and civil society. Tune in every week on the Voice America Business Channel.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So, Rafael, let's start with you. Security governance and security operations. First of all, let's define what both of those are. And is the separation required between the two?
So a definition would be security governance is managing the overall risk and threat and accountability of the for security in the organization, and the operation is actually implementing those security measures, whether it's managing the network, managing the servers, or the end user. And I definitely believe that there needs to be a separation of the two. It's almost as though you don't want the wolf watching the hen house, right? It's a matter that there's got to be some accountability and separation of duties. Separation of duties is a fundamental compliance requirement. But there needs to be accountability to that security governance. without accountability, then that separation just doesn't work.
So do you think that the separation is there and but then you're the only one holding the bag. So are you ultimately responsible for the both sides, though, right? I mean, it's not that you're separating it. That doesn't mean that you get to delegate it to someone else.
In our case, we do delegate it to someone else. But in terms of accountability, well, one of the things that we've done here in Illinois is I pulled together. We're going through a consolidation in Illinois, and we consolidated 12 of the largest agencies under the governor. And so one of the things that gets the least attention is security. But we have made some big strides in managing the security and the information assurance for the state. And one of the things that we've done is we formed a statewide security consortium, and that's the security leaders from each of those agencies that come together and meet on a monthly basis to define policy, to define understand what compliance issues that we are required, and to, for instance, go through a one of the largest projects that we're going through right now is the data classification project. So we're looking at, because it is all about the data, we're looking at where is the data. We're asking three simple questions: what data is confidential, where is that data, and who has access to that data. And you'd be surprised how much information that uncovers. And all you always wanted to know about the data. And so that accountability now becomes a very shared accountability, because the data belongs to the agencies and the central IT organization managing the infrastructure and the data center has a shared responsibility in managing the risk of that and managing the assurance for that data, but it has to be shared with those agencies. So now those agencies are at the table making those decisions along with us.
So, Dan, what do you think about this whole governance versus security separation?
Well, I mean, it's the same problem that we have cross-industry, which is sort of a terminology problem. To me, security governance is the controls architecture that you establish for the purposes of ensuring the organization. And that controlled architecture is basically a design issue, meaning you put it together, and you're the one who's responsible for its implementation across the company, enforcement of the behaviors that those controls require, both on the technical side and the people and the process side. And that's impossible to separate from security of operations. So that's basically what you're doing is simply continuing that controls architecture off into, you know, kind of infinity in terms of time. Ideally, you've got a controls architecture that's going to make sure that your organization's secure and that controls architecture essentially is maintained, correct, and enforced. Accountabilities are part of the controls architecture and enforced. I doubt seriously that most big companies have sort of got kind of thought it through to that point, but that's the way it ought to work.
So, David, in your view, how would you look at it any differently with respect to how security governance has been created and now security operations, and now you want to remove the word security and you want to replace it with assurance?
So I've seen it done many ways, and it depends upon how the organization kind of is structured and such. I think the key thing is that there needs to be a shared understanding of what the goals are, irregardless of who's performing the responsibility. I think the days of having a security group manage all the security technologies standalone and independent of the CIO created an opportunity of concern about availability impacts and change management process and such. So, I believe that there needs to be a kind of a governance program similar to what Dan stated about architecture and establishing what I would call baseline requirements for, we need to allow flexibility, and we don't want to get into the extreme details of how technology should be implemented, but we want to ensure that there is a minimum requirement that's met, and then based upon the risk profile of either the business or the organization, they can expand that or make it tighter, but they can't make it any looser than what the governance approach is for the minimum of controls there. So I think a combined approach kind of works. Organizations with complex business structures might approach it by having a central group that manages governance and operation and the tools and technologies takes place closer to, the business and the operational world. So I don't think there's a hard and fast answer or, experience can lead you down a path. We've seen that change over time. So unfortunately, the question is, or the answer is, I think it depends.
So now, can we leave it as subjective? Because when you said it depends, would there be, if suppose people are grappling with this problem and they want to go and get some concrete answers, are there any concrete answers to some of these questions that we just asked with respect to how people are separating these two and then how are you morphing to information assurance? Is there something being developed so that there is some holy grail that someone can pursue as a destination?
Well, I mean, we've seen that in the past where, you know, should physical security and information security be blended together? I mean, so I believe that, you know, there's maybe Dan or Raphael have more insight into that than I do. But, I think it's based upon the company and the company's risk profile.
So at the risk of sounding like an academic, there are a number of models out there that more or less present the way you might want to approach this. The most commonly used one is the ISO 27000 series, and that has 11 areas that you need to look at integrating into a single system. But there are a number of others out there as well.
So now coming to your experience, when David just said that it depends, and Dan, have you tried to interpret things differently, and this is what you've been driving home with your organization, that I need separate type of people and the number of people in order for me to do the job, and this is what is security governance related thing and security operations, because for them, you're a black box, right?
Could you expand a little bit further on that?
I'm saying, like, you know, would you not see that outside of the security team or that security department, everybody else looks at it as a black box, that you are one of a number of people who are working together to secure the fort, and that's where it stops. They don't care about what is being done for security governance, what is being done for security operations, how information assurance is coming into play. So would you rather that remain as a black box and just deliver what you have to deliver, or would you rather open it up for everybody else to see, for them to understand what your true needs are, and thus you are provided the resources that you need to get the job done?
Well, I mean, we're all in this together as a company. And if the people out there who are basically the ones that are create the security breaches because of social engineering or whatever mistakes they make don't understand that, you really are kind of in a rock and a hard place as an organization. So, I mean, an awful lot of what you're talking about here is really just simply spreading the awareness around the company that information security or assurance or whatever term you want to use is something that's basically a practice that's got to be embedded in the culture as a whole. You know, you're really not going to get any of that. I know that I say go visit the folks at the NSA, and, you know, they, right up to taking the batteries out of my cell phone, you know, it's that sort of procedure. I just follow that. Why? Because I know who I'm visiting. You know, if I go visit the people at Ford, I'm going to bring my cell phone and every other little item that I can think of because that's not part of their culture. And it really depends on who's who out there and what you want to have in terms of assurance. But the bottom line basically is that, you know, it's a, I hate to use the word holistic, but you know, it's a across the organization problem. It's not a security problem, and that's where it's got to get solved, is at the organizational level.
Raphael, we had been listening a lot about this end user BYOM, bring your own mobility, or BYOD, which is bring your own device. How does that change the landscape for you? I know you already don't get a good night's sleep because of the very role that you're playing. How much of this new paradigm or new flexibility that we tend to offer to our workers so that they can be more productive and are retained, how does that impact you?
Good question. We're pretty much here at the state. We're pretty draconian. You know, we just say no to everybody that wants to bring any new device in. And that's not necessarily the right answer, especially in other organizations that have a much younger or a much more highly technical staff force. So, you know, IT security, information assurance, security governance has always been have been the folks that say no, and we need to really be the folks to say, how can we do this? We need to always answer these questions. How can we now enable this? How can we enable the business to perform these functions? How can we enable the business to use these technologies in a safe and effective way? So it's a matter of, right, we're looking at, from a security governance, saying, all right, here are the controls that we're going to use. Here are the controls that we're going to monitor and we're going to manage. But then saying, now here's how we're going to implement those controls. And so those controls then become part of that operation. And it just becomes second nature to the organization that we can adapt to these new technologies and we can do it effectively. We can do it securely.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And let's ask the same question. And pose it in front of David and Dan, see what they have to say about this BYOM new paradigm. Please stay tuned.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
The Interstate Sportsman Talk Radio Show brings two well-known outdoorsmen to the Voice America Network with hunting and fishing info news, talking about everything from new sporting gear, places to hunt and fish, and getting more from your recreation time. Join hosts Brock Ray and Don Kirk Friday mornings at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 Eastern, for the Interstate Sportsman on the Voice America channel.
Being here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss being here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So we were discussing about the BYOD and or BYOM, which is bring your own device or mobility. So now with that being said, David, what have you seen across the board world has been doing to grapple with this?
I think a lot of companies that have just had an out-and-out policy against any of that, and whether that's even taking that further into accessing social networking sites or such, I think people find a way around these things, and so I'm sensing that we can't be using these delivery channels to communicate with customers and to attract business through these technologies, and yet prevent our own people from being able to use them and learn their capabilities. So I kind of come back to where, I'm sensing is that, we need to identify ways to implement security, so that people can bring their tools and also understand what are the HR issues of of that? What are the legal issues of that? But I think if we just prevent it, then people are going to figure out ways around it. So I think the best solution is strong education, good awareness programs, ways of monitoring usage, and finding the right controls that could be implemented to ensure that things are risks are mitigated appropriately.
So Dan, if you were to be given a choice, would you rather deal with rogue IT or shadow IT versus opening the floodgates with respect to BYOD or BYOM?
Well, I mean, I absolutely agree that it really comes down to having the people that are in the organization understand what all that means. It's very difficult to ask people that, kind of can get the technological advantage to give that up because of security. Generally, in my experience, I don't think they'll do that. But if you can get them educated enough that they understand what the implications of all that are, both in terms of use and also in terms of what it means, if you sort of kind of do something with whatever it is you're doing that causes a breach. People generally will do the right thing if that's what the organization asks them to do. But that's got to get communicated. And having security sitting there like a black box, that's a good term. Is sort of the fastest way to guarantee that's going to be a problem. A lot of what I hear basically is all about outreach, particularly awareness programs, which are not training. They're not that expensive. Even things like posters and that sort of stuff in the company that help people understand what, it means if you bring, say, a nice memory stick full of Chinese malware into the company, that sort of stuff. That really is something you just have to tell them once, and theoretically they'll do the right thing.
Now, is there any value, Rafael, we'll start with you, for to basically conduct security awareness training? Is that something which is a one-day vacation with free pizza and Coke, or people do truly listen and actually follow? Is that truly worth the investment, and do you see the results of that as you see people becoming more aware about their responsibility as workers within the organization and kind of help you securing the fort?
Great question. I think it's absolutely essential. Any organization that doesn't have a robust security awareness training program is really missing out a lot on a great opportunity to have their folks understand what the issues are. The people, the staff are, it's a paradox. They're the first line of defense and the last line of defense. They're the weakest link and the strongest asset in the organization. And so they really are the ones that need to be understanding what the issues are, what the concerns are, understanding how the business works and then what the risks are to that business and then what the threats are out there. And Dan was absolutely right. There's a myriad of opportunities for training folks, and it's not just a one-day event. It should actually be a continuous process. For instance, in Illinois, October has been proclaimed by the governor as the Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and we work in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security and the MSISAC to proclaim the entire nation as Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So every governor makes a proclamation, and we work very closely with DHS to produce information and posters and handouts and bookmarks, calendars. There's a whole number of things that keep security, keep information assurance in front in everybody's awareness so that they can understand what's going on. Last year we had an application security summit where we brought in application developers and across the state to talk about what are the issues at the application layer. That's where the biggest vulnerabilities are right now in our in the OSI layer. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because one of the comments that we received from many of the application developers was, I didn't realize that this was a problem. I thought that the network was handling all the security. So the security awareness needs to grow. It needs to go to the audience. It needs to be audience specific, so that we need to be able to tailor the message to the specific audience. There's business users that are not very technically savvy, but they need to understand what the issues are with phishing and websites that contain malware, that the problem there. Technically savvy users need to have their own specific message, and then the technical administrators need to have a message geared directly towards them. So it needs to be a very comprehensive program. Now that starts to get into a little bit more expensive, but it's well worth it when you look at how you're managing the risk. And there is a return on that investment, because you're now safeguarding your entire organization more appropriately.
All right, we've got 30 seconds, 15 seconds each, both of you. Would you be able to help give your thoughts on the effectiveness and the value of this training and how it totally makes a difference? Dan.
I'll go ahead.
I've got loose lips sink ships. Everybody knows what that means. Everybody has an implication about that. The bottom line, that's a World War II thing, but everybody knows what it is. It's a very effective awareness thing. If we could come up with one of those kind of things for information security, I think we'd probably be able to kind of at least make a little progress on the problem.
David.
And I think there's always going to be that next big threat out there that we're not prepared for, that new virus that we don't have a signature for, that intrusion that we don't have a footprint for, zero-day attacks and all that. But I feel if we train employees how to recognize the threats, what to do if they suspect one, and that whole proactive aspect of training developers about how to write good code in the first place and make it more of a pervasive program that's not just a one-time pizza and lunch kind of thing, but it's an ongoing program, I think that's your best return on the security investment.
Thank you so much. Now, on behalf of the show and our listeners, thank you again, David, Raphael, and Danielle. Hopefully, the information security to information assurance morphing, while it happens, the game may have changed, but the fundamentals kind of remain the same. And also, the players were all along, while we're being led by the CISO, but the whole company is responsible for making sure the fort is secured. Thanks once again.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sunjal Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.